Sustainable development is not an option, it is an imperative. Earth Odyssey is an international organization that aims to research, collect, and present solutions to inspire and empower the ones responsible for educating the children who will lead the world in the future. This is a podcast extracted from the webinar with panelists from around the world.
Webinar 8, The Imperative for Sustainable Human Lifestyles.
Good evening from Bali. Welcome everyone to this very special webinar. We have had webinars on people, nature, harmony, peace. And now we come, in fact, to the most important subject, and no one seems to be talking about it. We talk of climate change, we talk of extinction of species, we talk of air and water pollution, oceanic pollution, deforestation, all these subjects we talk about. And those are the symptoms of what is going on in the world. But what is the source of all these problems? And the source of these problems is human beings. It's human activities, in a way. Now, when you think of, that's the first issue. Do you think that it's almost all the problems are caused by human activities? That's the first issue. Second issue is to realize that we have a divide in this world. 20% of the world's population, mainly in the developed countries, accounts for 80% of total global consumption. Imagine that 20% more people in the world, in China, India, South Africa, who will adopt the same lifestyles as we have in Europe and the United States and Japan and Australia, then what will the other 60% of the people, there'll be nothing left for them except to exploit nature to even more. So the issue is the balance between these two. So human, sustainable human lifestyles is in fact a goal that we should have. And in fact, we need a universal declaration on sustainable human lifestyles. And so the subject that we have in front of us is probably the underlying foundation of everything, every crisis that we are facing. It is also important to realize that we live in an interdependent world. But at the same time, today we have unilateralism, we have self-interest, we have me first, and that's a recipe for disaster. You can have the rich and poor people in different countries with little consumption and very high consumption, but when they produce pollution, the pollution does not recognize any geographical or political or wealth boundary. So we live in an interdependent world. So I think the challenge for us, and the real challenge is to the youth of today, because the youth of today are the first generation in the history of humankind. Let me repeat, the youth of today, that some of you are the first generation in the history of humankind ever since we began, on whose shoulders has been put the responsibility to change course for a sustainable world. If you fail perhaps by the end of your lifespan, which is 60, 80 years ahead, we don't know what kind of a world we will be left with. So the responsibility is very much on the shoulders of the youth. Secondly, also the fact that youth are studying for a degree, for a narrow subject, and everybody's aim is to get a good income and to live a modern lifestyle driven by materialism, greed, and power, which is the driver of unsustainability. That's the train we are on. And so this, we have to get off this suicidal train, because it is a suicidal train, because when you live a modern lifestyle, somewhere in your lifetime, you will end up with diabetes, depression, cancer, cardiac disease, for which there is no cure. So all these are parameters that go back to the fact that the foundation of sustainability, foundation of peace, foundation of harmony is sustainable human lifestyles. And that is our subject. So when you make your points, I think if you can bear in mind, do you agree that the foundation is sustainable human lifestyles? Secondly, how are we going to change these lifestyles? Because everybody, like, you know, it's human nature to consume, but responsible consumption is what we need. And we are very fortunate again that we have 7 panel members. And again, we are covering North America, Central America, South America, and large parts of Asia. We are going to make the only parts that are excluded is Australia, Japan, and Central Asia. So we are, for our next webinars, we have already identified people to work with us. So I'm going to stop there. You all have 7 minutes, 6 to 7 minutes. And we will have, at the end, an open discussion. So we are going to start with Mexico. Vanessa, you have the floor.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us here. I'm really excited about being in this webinar with all of you. And thank you for the opportunity for giving us the youth the voice to share our thoughts and share more about the sustainable lifestyles that we need to be living. But thank you so much again. And thank you for the opportunity for being here with the Air Odyssey webinar. Well, so the imperative for sustainable lifestyles, I think that the sustainable lifestyles is a great concept that needs to be addressed. And it's it's not addressed frequently in the communities. It should be addressed to share through the communities how to live these sustainable lifestyles and how to contribute to protect the environment. But what is the sustainable life, or why everybody talks about that? Sustainable human lifestyles includes sustainable practices, sustainable health, sustainable beliefs, sustainable consumption, and also more and more behaviors about sustainability. Sustainable is defined as meeting the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. That's something that human beings currently it's not doing. They're not doing, they're just wasting the resources without thinking the future generations and without thinking to leave this ability to future generations to meet their own needs. So what is stopping the sustainable lives? Why people it's not like living this sustainable lives? Why it is so hard for them? So the consumers, it's not well known that they are not consuming in a rational way because they are pursued by unrealistic needs. People's capacity to actualize their sense of responsibility for the common good does not always is simple to address. People's not thinking in the common good, is only thinking in the own good. So accepting that lack of information represents a barrier towards behaving more sustainability and negatively impacts on the formation of attitudes and behaviors to actualize sustainable principles. And also, too much information can also increase consumers' confusion and leads them to be skeptical about corporate actions. So that means that world education about sustainable lives, it's need to be addressed in order for communities and people to start living a sustainable lifestyle. So sustainable lifestyle can be addressed from different disciplines and from different perspectives. Today, I wanted to address it as from the sustainable health perspective to achieve a sustainable lifestyle. So what is sustainable health? Well, sustainable health is a personal commitment to maintaining and taking responsibility for our own health through preventative means. Health is a three-way balance of genetics, environment, and state of mind. The only thing that we can control is our state of mind and the toxins that we put into our body through what we eat, through what we live, and through what we, the decisions that we take. So the reason that I wanted to address sustainable health to the sustainable life that we need to be living is that currently the pandemic, COVID-19 pandemic, is teaching us that health is really important. Even economy and even all other sectors can stop if we don't have health. So health is something really important, but we need to have a balance with the environment in order for us to have this sustainable health. Sustainable health, it's being in balance with the alimentation that we have and help us to have the necessary nutrients in order for us to have an emotional balance. And this can take us to have a less anxiety, less depression, and have more peace in our life. If we have this, we have a mental and physical health balance, and this avoids any unnecessary consumerism. And if we control the consumerism, we can contribute to a healthy environment. Responsibly consumerism protect the environment. So if we have a healthy environment, we are going to have healthy humans. And if we protect the environment will protect us. What we are living currently, this COVID-19 pandemic show us that we are not taking care of our environment. We are not having that balance. We are not thinking in the health of the environment, the species. We are only thinking in us. So that's why in this current pandemic, we are living this harm to our health, and we are living these problems and with any diseases that these diseases doesn't need to be happening, but this is the way that we are deciding to live. So I think that we have time to think more and to make more introspective about sustainable health, to address this sustainable health with us in order for us to protect the environment. And how to have a sustainable health? Why this is like too important? So to have a sustainable health, it's important for you to have a balanced life. It's important to have a healthy diet, exercise regularly, eat well, take preventative natural medicines to maintain health, and engage with spiritual practices manifested through meditation, mind training, and raising personal consciousness. Learn to live and laugh more. Be a little bit more balanced with our life, balance what we eat. And in that way, we're going to have a good immune system. We're going to be able to front any further crisis. So what is the youth doing for a sustainable human lifestyles? Well, in the POP movement, I'm a currently POP youth mentor of the POP movement. We have a lot of youth of Latin America that are working for sustainable human lifestyles. We have here in the screen, we have an example of a young person that keeps some workshops to people to know what to do with their organic waste. Also, there are some youth that through the music, they encourage communities and people to protect the environment and have better sustainable human lifestyles. So this is just some examples. I can take more time giving more examples, but this is just some of them. And also, if you want to know more, you can go to the webpage www.theprotectofparamilitarymovement.org. So I can leave it in the comments. So if you're going to know more about what it's doing, the youth for sustainable human lifestyles, you can check that webpage. So thank you so much. I just want to finalize this my presentation with this phrase that I think it's really important, that to have sustainable human lifestyles, we need education from the roots. Something well learned, it's hard to forget. So thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you. Thank you, Vanessa. You made 3 points, and we want to talk further with you, and I hope the other panelists will comment on it. 3 points. One was citizen campaigns, community campaigns, and Green Hope is doing at the grassroots level. But you can imagine that these are universal subjects, like human health is a universal subject, and we need a global campaign for that. If you take education, which you also mentioned, education, we need to educate the educators. Our parents need to be educated that they can teach the children sustainability. Our teachers in school also need education in sustainability. Our professors need it. Our professionals need it. So education is really the driver. And there is hardly a university, maybe 3 or 4 universities out of hundreds, which have courses in sustainable development. And they need to be mandatory, just like English or art or fitness are mandatory. So now we move on to Atma is not with us. We move on to Samuel. You have the floor.
I think Samuel is having a problem with his connection. He's coming in and out, so he's not here now.
So we move to Philo Magdalena is smiling. Philo, you have the floor.
Thank you. If you give me a minute, I'll share my screen.
Is the name Philo Philomena?
It's Philo Magdalena, sir.
Okay, please.
Is my screen shown now?
It's showing.
Yes, okay. So hi, everybody. To begin with, I'd like to thank the Earth Odyssey for giving me this wonderful opportunity to have this platform for youth to be recognized and have a voice. I'm not a science student, nor am I an expert in any field, but I come here with the experiences I've had since childhood and the learnings I've had through the POC movement that I've worked with in the past some years. To begin with, for me, I think sustainability, the term itself, is a very loaded concept. A lot of us are still struggling to comprehend what the term actually means in terms of the practicality of it. If you look at, so to set some context, I think I'm referring to an article that I read some months back. It was a criticism on the Paris Agreement about how it fundamentally deviated from the Rio Declaration in terms of how there is no focus on what in terms of how the developed countries are exempted from mandatory obligations to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions, and there is no focus on the distinction between the luxury emissions and survival emissions of both developed and developing countries. So when you make it voluntary for all countries to participate, there is no higher accountability that is demonstrated. So with this problem that exists, I'm referring to what Dr. Mahendra Shah said in the beginning about how 20% of the total population account for almost 80% of the total consumption that we have, and which translates to about 70% of greenhouse gas emissions. But there's one truth that we cannot ignore. I have two photographs here that I'd like to show. So when we talk about the emissions, excuse me, can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
So Okay. The reason I brought the photograph here is that a lot of times when you talk about conserving the resources, utilization of resources, it is important that we do not cut the opportunities for those who need the basic resources, but focus on the cutting down of luxurious or extravagant resources. This photograph is merely to highlight the differences between the left photograph is from a TV show from 1989. One thing I've noticed while watching TV shows since my childhood is how the ease with which they handle the appliances at home. Appliances like refrigerators, dishwasher, it's something that I've never seen in my life before. Things like sliding doors, metro rails, things that I saw in 1989, in a show from 1989. But in reality, the metro rail is something that I saw only in the year 2016 for the first time in my life. So in contrast to this, on the right side is a family from a rural village next to my home. It was taken right after the 2015 floods, which happened because of the monsoon rains. This photograph is representative of not just when floods happen, but when any rainfall happens in the region. There is no basic access to even toilet facilities. They have no access to electricity, no access to clean drinking water or any other basic necessity that needs to be here.
Philo, your slides are not moving, so please.
Okay. Can you see the photograph, sir?
No, you're still on the first slide.
Yeah, you are seeing the software, not, yes, now we see this.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Okay, so this is the second picture I was talking about. And now you may wonder why I take two totally random photographs together and put it here. And also the fact that social equality is looked at as an ideal concept that is realistically not possible. It is a sad reality, but that doesn't mean that we stop working to bridge the gap between the rich and poor and eradicate poverty. A lot of steps are being taken. Can you see my next slide? Yes. Okay. So we have the Sustainable Development Goals and N number of programs across the world, and a lot of experts giving on recommendations, solutions, and approaches for different stakeholders to take. So it's not that we lack solution at this point, it's the lack of political will and responsibility and exhibiting commitment that we as young people are at the moment pushing towards through advocacy. What I want to focus on right now is how individual action matters. To begin with, why are we focusing on youth? Young people are not merely the leaders of tomorrow or those who will suffer the consequences of inadequate climate action, but they are also, when we look at youth, we are cutting across boundaries of geography, social class, caste, ethnicity, and so on. Young people as a group are spread across the spectrum that we look forward to cover. They are also, incidentally, the largest consumer group. So if the 1.2 billion young people have to take a decision to stop using something, it will inevitably affect the market and change the course. So while talking of this enormous potential that young people can have, there is another positive thing that we can look at is that behavior change is something that's possible, realistically possible in the young population. So when behavior change is fostered in the young population, it influences not those around them, but through their attitudes and behaviors, when amplified, affects policies, affects government actions, and affects businesses. So talking of behavior change, I'd like to specifically look at the recycling, the many R's that we ignore before recycling. Recycling is sadly has become a concept that is only soothing our conscience. So the companies, big corporate, manufacturing everything that's practically apparently recyclable. So we buy things proudly saying they are recyclable, but not everything that is recyclable is recycled. So that's something we fail to look at. And there was a workshop on environmental ethics that I attended, wherein the facilitator spoke about how we as a young generation has lost a tremendous value that wasn't passed down from the previous generations, which is the skill to reduce, to repair things, to reuse things. So for example, when a footwear tears, the easier option is to get a new one. Sometimes why spend on repairing something when you have the money to get something new? So we attach economic value to things and not resource value, and that's where the problem comes from. So when we stop looking at things from economic capital point of view, but look at it as an invaluable resource. So even if people offer to you with large discounts, even if it is offered to you for free, even when you think about it, when you think for yourself that you do not need it and you attach a resource value to it and you say no, it may be a small act in some corner of the world, but it still is an act of rebellion. It still is an act of revolution. So when young people like this start saying no to things that they don't need, when you stop trying to fit into popular culture that only promotes mass production, when you try to bring in your own sense of, create your own sense of unique style through reuse and repair, refusing things that you know you don't need and reducing the things that you don't want, I think that's where we take the step towards sustainability. With young people holding enormous social capital, reclaim these 4 hours in their everyday lives. And I think that's how we move forward. We focus on buying local. We focus on normalizing wearing the everyday clothing, normalizing wearing the same clothes for different occasions. Normalize things like that and change our own attitudes. Create your own style. We make the change. I just like to end with the saying, you know how we take morality and ethics as something that's universal in every field that we work with, irrespective of whatever you do, they are central to everything. I think just like that, sustainability should be held as a value that we take irrespective of whatever we do. In every decision we take, the value of sustainability should reverberate. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. I think the underlying things which you were saying is really the youth.
Sorry, I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
The young people, how they are going to impact, you know, the power they have. And when you look at the, can you hear me? Yeah, when we look at young people, you talked about Paris. Remember, all these conferences are about compromise between nations and who has a better power to negotiate. But outside the conference, there are youths marching, demonstrating. And they are marching with placards which says, keep it under 1.5 degrees. They need to find specific issues. The climate thing is such a complex thing. You know, pick something like coal power, which accounts for 30% of the carbon. And that's a campaign you can do. The same way you mentioned human health, which is actually very, very critical. And the decision for health, which young people have the money to buy, etc. But young people are being brainwashed by the media to go more and more for the junk food. So these campaigns that the youth are thinking, the more specific is the campaign, the better the chance we have to make progress. But you have to prioritize. So, Samuel, is he back? No. We move on to Eugen then. Eugen, you can give us your three summary. You have 3 slides, I understand.
Yes, indeed. Thanks very much, Mahendra, for another opportunity to be at this webinar. One of the big challenges is obviously how to change behavior. That is something that's deeply embedded in the unconscious mind. And I came across a number of possible ways to change behavior, and I'll briefly introduce them to you. Well, the first one happened through my son. He developed ADHD and had daily emotional outbursts. And from that, we get something that used to be called behavioral training. Well, if you have seen these super nanny trainings that were on TV in many countries, it's exactly the techniques that we learn from local health services. And that helped to get the emotional outburst down, so there wasn't medication necessary, but it didn't fix the daily outburst. But in between, we continued to use the techniques we had learned, and also with our other children, and we came to this simple conclusion that people can learn, or children can learn, what is permissible versus what is not. At puberty, it is too late. So if people learn things prior to puberty, what an opportunity to create a desired behavior. Now, I mentioned it improved things, but there were still daily ADHD incidents. And at some time after the official treatments had insufficient results, I struggled about therapies that use the same techniques I had applied in data center computers to remove capacity bottlenecks. And at the end of the day, we are now down to one incident in 14 years. Dramatic differences, and there's huge opportunity to change unwanted behavior caused by mental matters such as ADHD, dyslexia, autism, and so forth. And the question is now, where is the research, which still needs to be done? From that, I got into something that I call next generation leadership training. And that used a technique called coaching. Coaching is available through businesses, but this is more the mental type of coaching. And through these classes, it turned out it is possible to get pretty quick two mental blockades. Actually, for me, three mental blockades were discovered, and it was possible to open the door to get over them, to break through them and change the behavior. The trick here with the mental coaching is to get to the emotions that hold the mental blockades, or the really hardwired ways of thinking, ways of behavior in place. So when we get to the emotions, the door opens, can apply additional techniques and get over mental blockades. And the next one is business coaching. That's something we actually practice these days heavily in the agile world. But the way I see it today is, well, people are coached, and the requirement is that people need to have the knowledge. Coaching, by the way, in this field means not telling a solution, not telling what to do, but coaching the person such that they find as many insights as possible themselves. Now, in our complex world, that works to a certain level, but at some point, additional information is needed that the people being coached just don't have in the environment. So I added a little plus to this coaching and added something to it. And that is basically when the coaching is exhausted, then external insights, knowledge can be contributed, but then still the people being coached decide whether that is relevant and whether that's used. And with that, let me share my screen. So you see the four points here, and then we get onto something everybody can do. There we go. Fixed ways of thinking when it's about bullying, hate, vandalism, crime, people can learn what is permissible, what not. Puberty is delayed. Capacity bottlenecks, or removing capacity bottlenecks in the field of mental matters, and the mental coaching to get over, to break through a hardwired mental blockades, the business coaching. And what we need today is kind of creating a new trend that gets us away from the things we have just heard about, and create a sustainable human lifestyle. So how can we do that? Well, actually, I worked in a very large company that integrated complete IT department from client organizations, complete IT organizations with thousands of people. We didn't have big training classes, but we asked certain questions again that get the message across, hey, this is more interesting. I want to be part of this. One of the questions was, for example, do we understand the root cause? Who is in charge of it? Are people motivated? Are clients happy? And again, that worked to a certain level, but at the cross-organizational level, we added other questions like, is what you propose executable? And we can do something very similar here as well. If everybody would ask a question like this, apart from money, what are your three contributions for sustainable human lifestyles? Imagine that people across the world start asking this question to their question, to their families, their parents, what implications that has at their workplaces. So from that perspective, I would say huge opportunity waiting to be used. And I would say, let's start with the one at the very top. And with that, thank you for your attention, and I'll give it back to Mahendra.
Thank you very much, Eugen. Coaching, people who do coaching do an absolutely excellent job. They have dedication, etc. But the problem is social media, advertisers, and the news media. They have the power of the media, they have the power of the wealth, and they are on commission from all the products they want you to buy. And that's the challenge we have, that all of us, the people who participate here with us, all want to be sustainable, all are committed to it. But then our own children are watching television and they want sugary and salt, because that's what the message keep coming on the television or on their iPhone. So it is very important that, again, when we think of citizens' campaigns, that we have to take on the power of this. And remember, the youth of today will have the power of the wallet. And there are, you remember the story of Nike. Little children of 3 years were making footballs. And then this got on, and Nike had to stop making footballs. So that's the power of the youth, and that's the one we need to mobilize. So thank you, Eugen. And I think we are going to have a special webinar on the experiment that you are developing.
Oh, yes,
Anna.
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah. Anna.
Hello, how are you? Can you hear me?
Lovely to see you again.
Nice to see you as well. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation. And I want to thank the other panelists, because I think what they've said is really important and really relevant to the subject. And I hope with what I say, I can add a little bit more so we can continue the discussion after all the panelists present. So I want to focus on something that has been mentioned by some panelists already, which is how there's different, how people with different income levels or who live in different countries have different footprints. So there's a study by Ivanova that states that in order to stay within the 1.5 degrees Celsius threshold, with a population of 8.5 billion in 2030, the average carbon footprint per capita in the world will have to be 2.8 tons of CO2 per capita. However, there are countries like Australia and the US who have over 16 tons per capita in their carbon footprint, and Qatar, which is the highest, has over 39 tons per capita. And I think this really speaks about how the difference between country development really affects the carbon footprint of the different citizens, and how when we talk about sustainable living, as Philo was mentioning, we need to talk about who is responsible for reducing their carbon footprint more. There are people whose carbon footprint is their basic needs, the food they consume, the getting their sanitation, water, and there are other people whose main carbon footprint is what they buy, maybe traveling, using very polluting ways of transportation. So I think we really need to keep this in mind when we talk about sustainable living. It's not, different changes need to be made depending on the context. And I think something we all need to do is really make a better job at deciding what we are consuming. the consumers need to have more transparent information on the packaging, the ingredients that are being used, and the amount of kilometers the product they would buy is being transported in order to decide accordingly and really know which product to buy in order to be more sustainable, or if they can reject that project and a product and go for a more sustainable alternative. I think making these kinds of responsible decisions should become a responsibility for all of us, because if we do it collectively, we will be able to change the demand and in turn change the offer. So I think all of us are really the base of the pyramid that we need to create systemic change. Without the change in decisions, there won't be true change at company or governmental level. So I think we really need to keep in mind how important our decisions are. And as Philo was saying, the youth amounts for a really big percentage of the population. So once we start making the changes, many people can follow. I would also like to talk about interconnectedness. This is something that has been mentioned in other panels, but our actions here not only affect where we are, they affect many other things. Like, for example, our emissions affect things global. The packaging we use and those don't dispose of correctly may end up in the ocean, right? So I think we really need to take into account that we are not only affecting our localities, but we may have a global effect when we talk about everyone, right? So I think, for example, this is something that I really like talking about, how even though I live in Mexico City, which is land up in the middle of the country, it's very important to raise awareness and to have a more sustainable way of living and produce less waste, because all this waste is very poorly managed in Mexico and it's very often that it ends up in the ocean. So I think once we all understand the interconnectedness between ecosystems and between our actions, we will be encouraged to have even more sustainable living. I think something that was talked about during the beginning was the need to create a guide, right? And to help people recognize what is affecting their carbon footprint, what is raising their carbon footprint, and what kind of changes can be done in their daily lives. I think relating to this, I am working on a project that works on this, which is called the Color Book. It's an app which will be launched by April this year, and it aims to help people transition to a more sustainable life by knowing their impact and knowing what actions can reduce this impact. And I think something really important that we notice is that people sometimes don't know what actions have the biggest impact, or they don't know what their impact actually is. So we're trying to tackle that because we really think it's the first step towards making changes in our lifestyle. I would also like to talk about some general tips about sustainable living. I think something really important is knowing that it's okay to start small. You don't have to make a crazy change from one day to another and leave out everything you currently live with, but you may start little by little making changes. For example, make a commitment of doing one small change maybe per month or per year, and little by little build up on this, and you will start auto-motivating yourself and you will be able to make many more changes. I think it's also, as I was saying, it's really important to understand your impact and the source of your impact. And we need to take into account the 20-80 rule. 20% of your actions will result in 80% of the results. So we really need to make the change in consumption very effective towards really reducing this 80% with 20% of actions, because we really need to reduce our carbon emissions as fast as possible. I think we also really need to focus on community action. When we talk about sustainable living, we can't stay within talking about just personal changes. We really need to talk about how the community can change, how the country can change, and how we can change globally in order to really make a big difference. And we need to involve more people. And finally, I would just like to mention the idea that the notion that we have to commit perfectly really excludes a lot of people. It really makes people not want to join this movement towards a more sustainable lifestyle or becoming zero waste or things like that, because they think, oh, but for example, I won't be able to leave this behind because that's how things are done in my house because I live with my family. And even though I've tried to change it, I haven't been able to, so I just won't do anything at all. People should be able to take these steps forward and be encouraged to keep doing so without being shamed or without being like accused of not doing enough. Like, we really need to consider that people have different possibilities and that everyone should be doing what is in their hands, and especially those in more developed countries who tend to have a larger carbon footprint.
Thank you very much, Anna. On my screen, Anna and Vanessa are next to each other. And you talked about the footprint of the poor and the footprint of the rich. You know, we forget that the poor recycle everything in their poverty, and they are very sustainable. One of the missions of Earth Odyssey is to do panel discussions. And I think Mexico, since you both sit next to each other, could be a wonderful place. And we would very much appreciate if you think about a panel discussion at the University of Mexico or any university you choose, and looking at it from this perspective, because it's a country with very rich people, country with very poor people, but music unites all of them. And the carbon footprint is so different. So I think it would be very useful for you to think about that. Interconnectedness you talked about, but fundamentally, we cannot go back to the situation that the United States is generating 16 tons of carbon, because 70%, 60%, 70% of what is in the atmosphere was caused by a handful of countries. And that's the reason for climate change. Today, China may be the highest producer, but in terms of per capita, it's one of the probably on the low side. So it is important that we will not get anywhere simply because we don't have the universal rights of nature. And even if you had the universal rights of nature, like we have the universal rights of human beings, nobody is persecuted. So that's not the way. The question is by coaching and by persuasion. So thank you so much, Anna. I think Malinga is not with us. And Pragna, thank you for being with us. And you have the floor.
Thank you, Dr. Shah. And good evening from Dubai. My name is Pragna, and I'm the head of events of Greenup Foundation. I will now be sharing my screen.
It's on.
Can you see?
Thank you.
Yes. Yes. Nearly 30 years ago, Nobel Peace Laureate Wangari Maathai gave an impactful speech at the Rio de Janeiro Earth Summit in 1992. She said, "One of the most positive results of the Earth Summit process is the growing strength of the international environment and development movement." So what has changed since the Earth Summit in 1992? Nothing. 20 years later, in 2012, Greenup Foundation was present at Rio Plus 20. Our founder president, Kerkishan Basu, spoke about the critical importance of responsible consumption and production as the youngest person to address a press conference there. And what has changed since then? Nothing. In 1992, 1,700 scientists would issue the World Scientist Warning to humanity to tell us that humans and the natural world were under threat and predict the consequences of climate change. But today, climate change is no longer a prediction. It has become clear that in the mad pursuit of development, driven by greed and personal ambitions, humans have wreaked havoc on nature. But nature is not a mere spectator. She seeks retribution through her natural calamities, and we are currently living through one, the COVID-19 pandemic. This cycle of our exploitation of nature and her subsequent rage will only end with the destruction of all life on Earth. This cycle can be slowed down, or better yet, stopped, if we collectively as a society decided to make conscious decisions. And this is where sustainable lifestyles step in. From the time we wake up to the time we go to sleep, we are faced with countless questions. What will I eat today? What will I wear to work? How will I go to work? What will I do in my spare time? It is astonishing to think that our answers to these daily questions could have an immense impact on nature. It is our consumption habits that shape the future of this planet. Over the past few years, the increase in the shift of populations to cities and urban areas has generated a dramatic effect on the consumption of our natural resources. If current trends continue, by 2030, humanity will need the equivalent of two Earths to support itself, according to some experts. Therefore, it has become imperative to realize the necessity of sustainable lifestyles in today's world. We at Green Hope Foundation educate young people about the link between these challenges and their lifestyles through our sustainability academies and various grassroots level projects, where we focus on localizing the SDGs through education for sustainable development. We have conducted over 225 academies globally, with a special focus on marginalized communities who are most often left behind in the sustainable development process. We have also organized virtual SDG summits during the pandemic to highlight the importance of intergenerational and multidisciplinary solidarity in achieving the SDGs, especially during a global crisis such as that of COVID-19. Climate change is one of the biggest global challenges that we are facing today. Yet, I believe that the biggest threat that we are facing is the belief that an individual is not capable of making a difference. The mindset that an individual holds no means or responsibility, and with many blaming and expecting governments to fix ecological degradation, we are, quite frankly, getting nowhere. We need to step up and devise a holistic approach towards a sustainable lifestyle. We need to read the 2018 IPCC report that clearly states that every individual needs to take action if we are to mitigate climate change. Simply blaming the government will not work. This shift towards sustainability can be achieved only if we realize the role that each sector plays. Using only energy efficient appliances, reducing food wastage and supporting local farmers, avoiding buying from fast fashion brands, using reusable bags and cycling to work or school are just some examples of actions that you can follow every day to lead a more sustainable life. On the other hand, the transition from a linear economy to a circular one, the implementation of better policies and stricter laws by the governments, strategic partnerships between organizations and political bodies, educating the youth and women, investing in clean renewable energy sources are some solutions that can be taken on a global and local level. In fact, we do just that at Green Hope Foundation. To promote sustainable lifestyles through sustainable sources of income, we have installed solar panels in Liberia so that the children can study at night and have safe spaces. In Bangladesh, we have also been providing skills-based training on sustainable agriculture, sustainable fishing and poultry, thereby creating local circular economies which benefit women the most. We have been working on providing clean water and sanitation facilities to the villagers. We have installed toilets for them and constructed deep bore tube wells so that they have a source of clean, arsenic-free water. We have also organized a Grow Your Own Food campaign to spread awareness around the world about sustainable consumption and production. Our members from Dubai, Bangladesh, Liberia, and India have successfully grown vegetables and fruits in their backyards and balconies. We believe that our small steps today can bring an enormous change tomorrow. We need to take action today because it is safe, I think, to assert that a sustainable lifestyle can no longer be treated as an option, but as an imperative if we want to achieve the future we want. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Pragna. It's interesting you made a complete circle, because Vanessa talked about citizen campaign, individual campaign, and really the issue is it's only the individuals can make a difference. But the problem is, and Green Hope is doing a wonderful job, but we need to scale up. We don't have the time to reach the whole world with this. And the question is, how can we have global citizen campaigns? We talk of governments and business. Governments and business, we pay them to be there. It's the citizens who have the power if they wish to change. So this issue of the individual, actions at the individual, but we need many, many Green Hopes. We need millions of Green Hopes very quickly. And we cannot wait for Rio Plus 20, which was 20 years after Rio 92. And Earth Odyssey, the whole project came. I had the honor to have attended all the summits from 72 and all the food summits and so on. And we want, they celebrated Rio Plus 5, Rio Plus 10, Rio Plus 20. Nobody wants to celebrate Rio Plus 30, which is 2022. Stockholm wants to celebrate 50 years of Stockholm. The real challenge also for Green Hope and youth and others, why do we have no continuity in this meeting and summit after summit? We do a summit, we have the document, and then we replant the same thing again and package it another way. So it is very important, this continuity, and we should really be building. And you are 100% right that when you build, like Vanessa was saying and Anna was saying, that when you build at the grassroots level, then the continuity starts in to spread to the society at the grassroots level. Because society at the grassroots level wants to copy each other much more than the poor want to copy the rich way. They would like to, but there are too many barriers. So it's 59, and we were generous. We are always generous, so you would have had the same time even if the other two, three speakers were here. So now we are going to have an open discussion, but I'm going to hand over to the person of power in our group. And the person of power normally is a lawyer, but this time we have a lawyer and a peacemaker. Ukepeme, you have the floor.
Thank you. Greetings. My name is Ukepeme Okun. I am an ambassador for peace and so on. Harmonious coexistence between humans and the earth system is a viable pathway to sustainability. Due to our connectedness, unhealthy, unsafe, diverse lifestyles negatively impact society and the environment. I'll be suggesting some practical, sustainable actions, among others. We need to imbibe community spirit. We need to practice responsible leadership. We need to practice responsible followership. And intercultural harmony is essential. Human, animal, and environmental rights must be respected and protected. We need to build a culture of durable peace, of non-violent conflict resolution, and harmony. We are encouraged to practice a continuous assessment. We need to evaluate the outcome of our actions because of the dynamics of sustainability. All these can be achieved when lifestyles are values-based. let us individually and collectively be accountable for the sustainability we crave. Thank you.
Thank you, Kepeme. Always very precise and a good summary. Now, we have time to discuss an open discussion. And the ideas that are coming are a little bit narrower than the general statements. You know, when scientists, Philo, she said, I'm not a scientist. I'm not an expert. But Philo, you are a human being, and we need human beings for change. Because the science is only a tool. Expertise is only the tool. But the human being with consciousness are the ones who can make this transition, this change. So we need to start thinking, because Yuri, we are one third of the way on our trip. Just like the Sustainable Development Goals, it's a third of the way, and they've got 10 years ahead. And climate action also is a third of the way. The same applies to Earth Odyssey. And we need to be planning for this year of the ideas that are being born here, like the idea for Mexico, that to approach the university, a good university in Mexico, to hold this panel discussion. And we will communicate directly to you that what's the benefit for the university to have that. It's on the world stage and so on. And it will be serving a social purpose. So that is one of the things. But the important thing that I see is, how many of you agree that we need to innovatively, creatively think of citizen campaigns? How to involve citizens? And now citizens don't have the knowledge, by definition, they don't have the expertise, but citizens have the heart and the humanity. And how can we, the youth, the educated youth and the educated people, can mobilize, but a global citizen campaign? You know, the governments can talk till the cows come home to have universal rights of nature. But we need the citizens, because in the end, it's the citizens who will practice the right on the ground to protect nature. So how can we start citizens' campaign? What does it take? Any comments, please? Anna.
If I may start, I think there are many different ways to start these citizens' campaigns. But nowadays, we have social media as a really, really powerful tool. We're able to connect with people from across the world in a matter of seconds. So I think really using these tools for the benefit of the planet and to create campaigns that allow everyone to join will be really useful. I also think making it an inclusive movement where the possibilities and the context of different people are considered when you build the campaign in order for as many people as possible to be able to join. And I know there are many people who are harder to reach, but there's always the way. It might take a little bit longer mm-hmm. to reach those marginalized communities. But I think that you're able to come up with plans on how to reach them. Maybe with your university or school, plan a trip there and ask to share the campaign with them. And also always considering the main stakeholders, right? So always starting from the main stakeholders and spreading the campaign up.
Thank you. Yuri, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, just acknowledge what's happening now in the world. We have a very divided society. You see what happened in Washington just a few days ago. You have very passionate people. Sometimes they're misled. I mean, not violence is not the answer, of course. But if you could find a way to harness those people, to get them passionate about nature, about saving their own, you know, skin after, you know, we are saving the planet, not for the planet, but saving for ourselves. I mean, the planet will go on. If the human race disappears, it's even better for the planet, right? The planet will continue without us, better than we're doing to them. So if you could find a way to get those people with all those passion, all that energy that they put into a wrong path, into violence, and make them really understand that we need to preserve this planet for the future generations and for all the, of course, species, that could be something. That could be something that really worth thinking about. But how to do that? I mean, it's very easy to get somebody to, incite him to do some violent act. But to get the same guy who puts all his energy towards something good for the good of everybody, for the mankind, for the nature, that's a little more difficult, I think. But I think that's the way. How to transform this human energy into something positive, not to violence, not to, this radicalization, but to something positive for the planet. That's the big challenge.
Yeah, Yuri, I think a lot of us are desperate because the United States was the model of democracy, science, technology, freedom, etc. And how fragile this system is, that it's broken. And that system is broken, and when a system breaks, it's not, you can break a system in a matter of months or a year. It takes you 100 years to rebuild that system. And the plant of this separation has been planted. And I think the world has to wake up. I know the Europeans are thinking deeply, how can we quickly stop this pot from boiling over? So that's certainly the challenge for us, and how to bring it. And again, this takes you back, because all human beings are rational. Citizens are rational, and we need to work with that rationality. And when you are rational, you work within the resources you have. You make do with it. And sharing resources, you go to any slum in any city in the world, people are sharing. People are smiling and people are dancing. They may go to bed hungry, but there is joy in their faces. Next, who wants to? Because if
I may go.
Please.
Yes. So I want to take an example from the state of Tamil Nadu, the state I'm in the south of India. The people here have always been very politically and socially conscious, irrespective of what part of the society they come from. Even if it is a family with not having enough resources to meet 3 square meals a day, has a comment on the political system of political nature of the state and knows the happenings. So this has been mainly possible. I know that social media is a great tool to get citizen action and to spread the message and things like that. But a lot of times it doesn't move beyond the youth. So for people to reach every last person, I think at least in the state that I come from, there is a television in every household. And the reason for a lot of their social consciousness comes from the movies they watch, the things that they watch on TV, which are often based on social issues or political issues amidst the other sometimes trash that they produce. So if we bring in whatever campaigns that we have for social media or to begin in educational institutions, that sensibility, you bring it in movies through themes, not just like direct themes, but as a secondary themes that accompany everything else, and you instill consciousness like that, it becomes a trendsetter for the people to follow. I think that has worked here, which we can explore.
Thank you, Philo. It raises a question in my mind, that do you think the fact, can you name one leader in this world of any one country who is your dream person, who is doing what the world needs? Can you think of one person at all in this whole world? At the leadership, at the political leadership. The reason I asked that, there hasn't been for 50-100 years. We don't have a leader who is committed to humanity, not just to their country. And even to their country, there are differences. the thought came in my mind, Philo, when you were talking, that Gandhi, who had no office, and you can think of it in any way, but the thought came in my head that Harvard University students all went to his ashram to live with him and work with him. Do we have any leader in the world today where you will go and live in huts and work with such a leader? So the leadership is missing. And then the question is for the youths of today, because they are the leaders of tomorrow. What training are you getting to become conscious, committed, empathetic, caring, and altruistic leaders? What training are we getting? Or are we all getting on this train of modern lifestyles? That's the question.
We had a very good leader here in South America, which is the former Uruguay president, Pepe Mujica, or Jose Mujica. He was a very simple guy, and he really had a good message he sent to his people. Even though he was a president of Uruguay, he kept living in his same small house with his same drive, his Beetle, Volkswagen, old Beetle car. So it was a very good example, at least. And that's, he's retired now, but that's the only guy I can think of in the past decades. I don't see anybody in the future that can really fulfill those, example you want. I don't see there's a, I think maybe in the future, maybe we have to educate now, so 20 years from now, they're going to have a great world leader, but not now.
Yeah, but it reminds me of President Nyerere of Tanzania. While he was prime minister and he had the full term ahead of it, and he made a decision that on the 15th of January, after my term is over, I am going to the village. And he did. He could have stayed on, but he is one of the few leaders. And the most famous thing he ever said was, the industrial countries of the world have been trying to go to the moon for the last 5 years. And they have been to the moon and come back many times. For hundreds of years, we are trying to go to the village, and we still don't know what is the road to the village. Which, the life in the village, that's where the people are, whether it's a village or a town. So we need leaders like that. And you had a good leader in Lula when he started, but then along the road, it didn't work out. What about Germany, Eugen? Mrs. Merkel wants to quit now.
Yeah, I must say I'm surprised how well she directs Germany through the crisis. She had a setback a few years ago when she opened the door for the refugees. But now with Corona, she is very highly regarded in Germany. And it will be hard to find anybody who is up to the level she has demonstrated. And she's, by the way, that's something I heard recently, she isn't impressed by driving big cars and the like, but is more down to the people. So, that will be a challenging time after she retires. I believe it's in September.
Yeah, but there you point out whatever criticism we may have of Angela Merkel. The fact that she opened the doors to people who are willing to drown in the Mediterranean, that is a humanitarian, absolute humanitarian act.
Yeah.
While Austria and all these other countries were closing their borders, said no transit to Germany. So whatever we think, whatever problems it brought, but remember, every human being has been a refugee at some point in your life. And you seek refuge, and people have helped you to find that. So I think that act of her is historical. And the same I would say, of the Prime Minister Ardern of New Zealand, because people asked her that this Muslim people are creating these problems here. And she said, Muslim people? What Muslim people? We have no Muslim people in our country. We only have New Zealanders. So this kind of, it was just two, three women leaders who had the naturally endowed characteristics. And this brings me to the point that the second part of the Earth Odyssey mission is not to empower women. We want to inspire the women because God has empowered them with the characteristics that are critical to save the human world and to save nature. And that is really a very important aspect in our Earth Odyssey. Inspiring women that they have the characteristics to heal the human divisiveness and the destruction of nature. And again, we have a majority of women with us today. Or is it equal? No. Yeah, you're in the majority. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, we're 3. So that is also an area that I think in all the things we do, how do we inspire? Now, as we come nearer to the end of the seminar, I'm going to do some homework. And if you're very welcome to copy the homework I'm going to do. I'm going to take my mobile phone this week and make a little video of whatever I see here in Bali, okay, related to sustainability and the subjects we are discussing. How many of you would like to copy me to do this in Germany, to do this in Dubai, to do this in Mexico, and to do this in India and Brazil? I think, Yuri, you can also commit that just sent a video. We will share it with this group of what each one of us sent in. And so why don't we... can you follow me, please, or copy me, or inspire me?
Yeah, and I'll ask just something I want to say. Samuel from Nigeria, he was supposed to be here with us. He's been trying to, you know, get... He's been in and out all the time. His connection is very bad. So we're going to ask him to make a video of what his message was going to present, and then we can share, too.
Please.
Because he's really trying to get in, but he couldn't.
Okay. No, that's excellent. Yeah, no... I think everyone who does come in and is unable to, like we had the lab professor from India couldn't connect also. So yeah, we should ask them to send it in. Yes, thank you.
There's a comment somebody is saying.
Yeah, the Tamil Nadu, Karnataka, and Kerala. These are the literate, forward-looking states in India. So, what would you like to do next? What is your advice for Earth Odyssey? How do you want to become ambassadors of our project? And I think, Yuri, we need to plant these ideas. Now we need to start getting people on board. Because we've been through our series of webinars. The next webinar, I think, is on human health, on the whole issue of human health and wellness. And a number of you raised that very critically. So that's our next webinar in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Something we have to say is that we are recording, of course, all these webinars. They're going to be online. But also, as we prepare the documentary for 2022, that will be something we're going to do from Earth Odyssey, a documentary about the Rio plus 30 and of course, Stockholm plus 50. We might be including these messages, the best messages from these webinars, because we have so many very nice quotes or some very nice ideas. We want to spread them more. So I'm going to put them in this documentary.
And that's the idea of the little video clips also, that if everybody starts to send, then we have a collection of video clips from which we can begin to make a frame and then do a campaign of the panel discussions that we would like to do I hope that COVID is over in a year and we can go to the countries and have on-site panel discussions. So that would be a good start on that. But we need to start being practical, because one third of the way into the SDG and nobody is excited that we have not made progress. The same with the Paris Climate Accord, which started in 2015, the end is 2030. And then I woke up this morning and I said, we don't have a 15-year time horizon, we have a 3-year time horizon. So we need to be moving. And in that context, I've spent the last 6 months writing 55 pages. And tomorrow you will get this. This has, it covers 32 issues of sustainable development. It has about 120 references. It has about 20 video links. And it covers all the summits, whether it's food or sustainable development, etc. Earth Charter, Millennium Development Goals, SDGs. It's a story of my own journey as a witness. And I decided to write this and by the end of our one-third. I thought that's a good input to make. So it is being finalized. It is finalized. Actually, I have the final copy in front of me. So tonight I'm going to work with UKPEME and organize and send it to you. You'll be the first group to get it. It has nice pictures also of me 40 years ago and then working through in the years. And the central reason for writing this story is it doesn't matter what you study. Just with your consciousness and your humanity, no matter what the subject is, you can excel in it. Now, I have no words of wisdom. I haven't excelled, but it's been a beautiful journey, and you will see things that you don't believe happens in life, like a speech I wrote and presented at the United Nations in Vienna. A poet came along and took the speech and wrote a book of poetry based on the words from the speech. And that, in a way, when I think of it, I am a scientist, but I think the greatest heritage of mankind, humankind, is art, craft, poetry, and literature. So that's an example that always remains. Buildings will be gone, cars will be gone, wealth will be gone. But art and poetry and literature remain forever. Vanessa, you are shaking your head.
No, yeah, I am. I agree with what you were saying. And since you asked the question about how to mobilize communities with campaigns, I have been having something in mind that I wanted to share with everybody, that it's like an advice that you said also, that what advice do we have to authorities, to the leaders? I think that something that we are forgetting is to listen to the community. I think that the leaders and the authorities are taking decisions without seeing what's the reality, without seeing what are the needs of the community. They do laws, they do decisions that cannot be applicable to some communities, to some regions, to some countries. So I think that's something really important that we need to do and improve, is to listen to the community before we make a decision, or before we make a law, or before we make another decision for the community. So I think that's something that it's really important and that we are missing. And to respect also the culture of the community, because the community has different culture, has different thoughts. So be respectful with the community, with what they think, and listen with what they need, so we can work to make better sustainable world with the communities.
Mm-hmm. Pragna, in the same spirit, you are based in Dubai for Green Hope. Is that correct?
Yes, Pragna? Yes.
So you are based in Dubai. Can you tell us about what community? Because you have the Emiratis on the one side, and then you have the guest workers, the international workers that are building properties and so on. In terms of community, and you know, I lived in Qatar for 3 years, and children don't know how food is grown and what happens. And you gave us a slide which shows that you were teaching in the schools. So can you tell us something about your work as Green Hope in Dubai?
Yes, actually Green Hope Foundation was started in United Arab Emirates. So we began our organization in Dubai. From the beginning itself, we have carried so many grassroots level programs. We started very humbly with some tree planting sessions, cleanup drives, mangrove planting campaigns across all the Emirates in the United Arab Emirates. We've also reached out to a lot of schools in the workshop. Sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So I was saying, we've also spread awareness through our academies and workshops that we have conducted over the years in various different schools based in the United Arab Emirates. And right now I am studying here itself in university, my second year, studying biotechnology. So I continue to work from Dubai and creating awareness from UAE.
Dubai is of interest to us because we plan to have again a panel discussion, and we have to make a choice between the Emirates and Qatar. And now Qatar is being welcomed back in the group. So one of the two. Qatar is attractive because of the Qatar Foundation and the 24 universities, but I think Dubai is also interesting. So maybe you can discuss this with Kekeshan and see how you can organize a panel discussion in the case of Dubai, for example, or Abu Dhabi, it could be.
Yes, definitely.
Samuel, you have the floor. Can you hear us, Samuel? Can you see him, Yuri? I can see him.
Yeah, but I think he froze. Yeah, he froze. He's trying to bravely to join us, but only, you know, like
maybe,
a second.
Maybe without the video might be better.
Yeah, but I don't think he's listening anymore. I think he's froze.
All right, but you can pay me. We will get in touch with Samuel and see if he can video himself on this talk, because I think we need to have that input in.
Yeah.
Let's see if he's coming in.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. So, well, he tried.
Okay, so we agree each one of us will send a 1 minute video, 2 minute video. Yuri, you are the expert. How many minutes?
Oh, one is okay. I mean, just the best message you can record in your community, and that is going to be very nice to put them together and see what's happening.
So let's ask for 3 minutes each, and then we can do a bit of editing.
Yep, that would be good. Yes.
Eugen, this applies to you as well.
It might be a little bit challenging, but we'll see.
Camera quality, phone quality is good enough.
Yes, yes, yes. Just
please.
Also the message. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And if I forget, please remind me that I promised this. So now we will do it. Let's just, you are the first group to do this, so let's try it. And any comments you have on how many of you have been through the Earth Odyssey document? Eugen has been through it. Now everyone has been sent, you can pay me the full document. Because
yes.
that gives That gives you Act 1 to Act 8 on what we plan to do, including the music event at the end. So we would like some feedback from you on your own advice. And one of the advice that comes out today very strongly is at the community level, that at the grassroots level. And that was our all idea, that when we do the panel discussion, we would have half the people coming from the grassroots community in the panel discussion, youth and adults. So any suggestions you have on that, please send them to us. And also, we have a little bit of experience. Eugen has a lot of experience in coaching and how to work with complex organizations. So any of you who in your own work, including Green Hope, or the work, Anna, you are doing, all of you are doing, we are here available for providing whatever input we are able to put into your own project. So please, we are a community, and it's a two-way process, and we are there for you.
Okay.
So any more comments, or we open the glass, bottle of wine? I don't have any wine here today, and the resort is closed. If the resort is closed, it's 10, 11 o'clock now. So
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm here in Brazil. It's 11:30 for me, about to get into lunchtime. I would invite you, but I don't think the plane will get here in time. I'll have to wait for your 12 hours flight. So I'd like to thank you very much, everybody, for joining us today. It was a great message. I learned a lot, and I hope to see you guys next time.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you, and wish you well. Stay well and stay safe, please. It's not over, so stay as safe as you can, and good luck. And thank you for being our ambassadors. Thank you.
Thank you so much,
Mahendra.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And continue the hard work together.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Join us at earthodyssey.org and sign our YouTube channel at youtube.com-earthodyssey.